Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo and Steve Ember. But first, this report from Alice Bryant.
Imagine that you have just arrived at a hotel after a tiring 7-hour overnight flight. At the front desk, the staff person welcomes you, gives you a warm smile, confirms your reservation quickly, and hands you your room key. They tell you the complimentary breakfast is still being served in the dining room. You now feel completely at ease thanks to a hotel receptionist who did their job well. Front desk staff are available for direct communication with guests all day, every day. They reserve rooms, check guests in and out, respond to all kinds of questions, and resolve complaints. They may also recommend places to eat and shop and sights to see. People travel for many reasons, and tourism is one of the biggest. In 2018, 1.3 billion people traveled overseas as tourists, according to the UN World Tourism Organization. Whether traveling abroad or domestically, hotel guests often decide if they will stay at a hotel again based on their interaction with hotel staff. And hotels around the world have at least one other thing in common. They use English as their lingua franca, hotel English to be exact. So, what exactly is hotel English? It is polite spoken English that includes a lot of hotel terms and expressions. For example, a receptionist might say, "Welcome to the Potomac East Hotel. How can I assist you today?" and other expressions many times each day. But a hotel staffer's day is never routine. Guests make a range of requests. That is why a good ear for spoken English in a range of accents and speeds is critical to the role. All in all, hotel English is nothing to fear. Hotels generally offer training in what to say and how to respond. And usually, perfect English is not mandatory. The staff are instead expected to be effective communicators and offer outstanding service. Mona Fall has been working in the hotel industry for 9 years, first in Iran and then Washington, D.C. She has worked for the Hilton and Graham Georgetown. Currently, she works at the front desk at the Hyatt. She joins us in person to talk about language she uses on the job and give advice to those interested in the profession. Mona, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start by telling us some of the things you enjoy most about your job?
I would say the most enjoyable thing in my job, you can see different people every day. And sometimes they are coming with as a family and they are exciting to be there. And when you are nice to them, they appreciate you. And I really enjoy this feeling. I always appreciate them as well.
Oh, great. And you have the opportunity at the place where you work now to talk with people from all over the world, right?
Exactly. They are coming from everywhere, from Europe, South America, and any state. Because of this job, you can see the people from around the world and the people who has a different job, like some of them working in NASA, some of them working in military. And this is really interesting. This is really enjoyable.
Oh, very nice. Next, we're going to do something fun. So imagine that I'm arriving at the front desk as a new guest.
Hi, good afternoon. How can I assist you?
Hi, how's it going? I'd like to make a reservation for today until Thursday. Do you have any vacancies?
So, what kind of room are you looking for? Are you looking for a king or double queen, or we have king suite as well?
I just need something with a simple bed, but I'm hoping to have a room with a nice view.
Okay, the thing is, yeah, right now we are in middle of the city, but I tried to find a nice room for nice view and quiet room. Is it important to be far away from elevator?
It's better if I'm not near the elevator.
Okay, so let's look up our occupancy for tonight. And you said, what's your departure date going to be?
So today, Monday, until Thursday.
Okay. So our rate for tonight is, it's look like 219 before tax. Is it okay for you if I go ahead and make your reservation?
Okay, and what's included in the price? Do you have a gym? Do you have a pool?
Yes, ma'am. Our hotel has a 24-hour gym. We have a pool, which is 10 to 10, from 10 a.m. until 10 p.m., and we have two restaurants at the hotel, which is one at the rooftop, and it's open every day except Sunday. And our restaurant here at the third floor, it's 24 hours.
Oh, great.
Okay, so I'm going ahead and make your reservation with this rate. Could I have your ID and your credit card as well?
Sure. Here you go.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to put your information at the system, and let's find a nice room for you. I'm going to give you a catalog, which is all hotel informations there. You can find any restaurant nearby and some more information about the check-in, check-out time. And if you need any map of the area, it's right behind you. If you need any tour for DC, we have concierge here from morning until 6 p.m. And let's go ahead and check you in. Thank you for staying with us. And let's give you the room number. There is a keypad at the elevator. You need to tap your key first, and after that, press your floor.
Okay, great.
Is there anything else I can help you today, ma'am?
Yes, actually, I would like a wake-up call tomorrow at 7 a.m.
Okay, Miss Alice, I'm going ahead and put the wake-up call for you. I'm here until 11. If you need anything else, I'm Mona. I can help you as well, okay?
Thank you so much. Great.
Enjoy your stay.
Thank you. What advice would you give to non-native English speakers who are interested in a job as a front desk person?
So first thing I would say, if you have a chance to be a volunteer and just watch, just listen to the people who is working, if you got this opportunity, just listen. This is the things I do a lot. Sometimes I'm just listening to, because in my hotel right now, not everyone is American. Everyone has accent. And the first thing is really important at front desk. You can't be a shy person and be at front desk.
So would you say you have to be a people person?
Exactly. You should be really, really nice with communicating with people, because you're going to see a thousand different people. And they are tired. They are coming and after a trip, sometimes after a long flight. You should understand probably they're not always in the good mood with you. try to be like the people who can communicate with every kind of people.
So you have to be a people person, a good communicator.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be patient.
Exactly. Another thing I would say, you should have a good memory too in this job. This is the job you should be multitasking and do a lot of things at the same time, and you should have a good memory.
Okay, that's great advice. Very good. Well, thank you so much again, Mona, for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Words and Their Stories. On this show, we explain common expressions in American English, where they come from, and how to use them. And today, we talk about being overcome with emotion, both good and bad. We have a somewhat strange expression you can use to describe that situation: to be beside yourself. So if I say I am beside myself with joy, I am filled with joy. However, I can also be beside myself with grief, anger, or most other emotions. You can use this expression to talk about others too. Just change the reflexive pronoun. For example, a woman who gives birth can be beside herself with awe and probably exhaustion. The new father can be beside himself with awe, too. This expression is useful and simple, but strange. It sounds as if someone has become two people. How can you be next to yourself? Being beside yourself is technically impossible. Some word experts say the expression may come from a belief about magical powers of the soul or spirit. To some, experiencing extreme emotion, whether good or bad, can make people's souls leave their bodies. In other words, if a person is under great emotional stress, the soul and body could actually separate and stand beside each other. Now, let's talk about usage. In American English, you can simply say, "I'm beside myself," to mean you are shocked or very upset. For example, if you have a bad fight with a close friend, you might be beside yourself. You might scream, write your friend an angry letter, or just go somewhere by yourself and cry. Here's another situation. A high school student applies to several colleges. If they all reject her application, she could be beside herself. She might stay up all night worrying about what to do next. Here is another example. If a person becomes seriously ill, he could start talking in a way that does not make any sense. The patient may also start behaving strangely, walking around the room back and forth, back and forth. He may think he is seeing someone who is not really there. A doctor might say, "He is delirious with fever. He is beside himself." We have another expression that is very similar to being beside yourself. We can also be out of our minds. We use this expression in the same way we use beside oneself. So we can be out of our minds with fear, with love, with happiness, or with any other emotion. And just like beside oneself, we also use this expression on its own, without a specific emotion. So if someone says or does something crazy, like learning how to ride a motorcycle on a dark, rainy night, you can simply say she is out of her mind. In that example, you could also say the person is crazy or has lost it, as in their mind. And that's all the time we have today. But if you join us next week for another Words and Their Stories, we will be beside ourselves with happiness. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We tell the story of the 38th President of the United States.
Mr. Chief Justice, my dear friends, my fellow Americans, the oath that I have taken is the same oath that was taken by George Washington and by every president under the Constitution. But I assume the presidency under extraordinary circumstances never before experienced by Americans.
Gerald Ford was sworn into office on August 9, 1974. Ford was vice president to Richard Nixon, who had announced the day before that he would resign. If Nixon had not resigned, he might have been removed from office. Congress had been moving to charge him with corruption in the Watergate case. At his swearing-in ceremony, the new president spoke about the nation's future.
My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over. Our Constitution works. Our great republic is a government of laws and not of men. Here, the people rule.
He went on to say,
as we bind up the internal wounds of Watergate, more painful and more poisonous than those of foreign wars, let us restore the golden rule to our political process, and let brotherly love purge our hearts of suspicion and of hate.
Gerald Ford became the only leader in American history to have served both as vice president and president without being elected. Richard Nixon chose him as vice president in October 1973. That was when Nixon's former vice president, Spiro Agnew, resigned because of criminal charges that he failed to pay his taxes. When Nixon himself resigned, Ford became president. Ford was a longtime congressman from the state of Michigan. He was well liked by his congressional colleagues. His education was in economics and political science at the University of Michigan. Then he attended Yale Law School. During World War II, he served as a naval officer in the Pacific. After the war, Ford entered politics. He was a member of the Republican Party. He was first elected to the House of Representatives in 1948. He won re-election 12 times. Republicans in the House elected him the minority leader during the administration of Democratic President Lyndon Johnson. Ford was still minority leader when Richard Nixon, a fellow Republican, was elected president in 1968. In his leadership position, Ford helped win approval of a number of Nixon's proposals. He became known for his strong loyalty to the president. It was no surprise then when Nixon named Ford as vice president. Gerald Ford was an accidental president. He came to office in a sudden turn of events. Almost as suddenly, he had to decide what to do about the former president. After Nixon left office, he could have been charged with crimes for his part in covering up the events of Watergate. Instead, 1 month after Nixon resigned, President Ford settled the question. He pardoned Nixon for any crimes that he might have committed. The pardoning of Nixon made many Americans angry. Some believed he should have been put on trial. They thought he might have answered more questions about Watergate if he had not been pardoned. Ford said he pardoned Nixon in an effort to unite the country. For a while, though, the pardon only seemed to intensify the divisions.
And I wondered whether anybody had brought to your attention the fact that the Constitution specifically states that even though somebody is impeached, that person shall nonetheless be liable to punishment according to law.
In October 1974, President Ford appeared before a congressional hearing on the pardon. He gave a strong response to questioning by Democratic Representative Elizabeth Holtzman.
Mrs. Holtzman, I was fully cognizant of the fact that the president, on resignation, was accountable for any criminal charges. But I would like to say that the reason I gave the pardon was not as to Mr. Nixon himself. I repeat, and I repeat with emphasis, the purpose of the pardon was to try and get the United States, the Congress, the President, and the American people focusing on the serious problems we have both at home and abroad. And I was absolutely convinced then, as I am now, that if we had had this series, an indictment, a trial, a conviction, and anything else that transpired after that, that the attention of the President, the Congress, and the American people would have been diverted from the problems that we have to solve. And that was the principal reason for my granting of the pardon.
Anger about the pardon was still strong when President Ford made another controversial decision. He pardoned men who had illegally avoided military service in the Vietnam War. Most of them were not sent to prison. Instead, they were offered a chance to do work for their communities. Many of the men, however, did not accept the president's offer. Some stayed in Canada or other countries where they had fled to avoid the draft. President Ford received greater public support when he asked Congress to limit the activities of the nation's intelligence agencies. He hoped better control would prevent future administrations from abusing the constitutional rights of Americans as Nixon had done. On another issue, Ford, while serving as vice president, had described inflation as America's public enemy number one. He had supported several measures to fight it. As president, however, an economic recession forced him to cancel some of those measures. Inflation decreased during the recession, but unemployment increased. On foreign policy issues, Ford kept Henry Kissinger as Secretary of State. Kissinger had won much praise for his service to Richard Nixon, including in the opening of diplomatic ties with Communist China. But Kissinger had also received much criticism. Critics accused him of interfering with civil liberties in the name of national security. They also accused him of supporting the overthrow of the Marxist government of Salvador Allende in Chile. By the time Ford became president, the United States and the Soviet Union had taken steps to try to limit the spread of nuclear weapons. Nixon and Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev had signed two such agreements as part of the détente policy to ease Cold War tensions. Relations with China were also less tense than before. American policy in Southeast Asia, however, had failed. Involvement in the Vietnam War had officially ended the year before Gerald Ford became president. But fighting continued between South Vietnam and communist forces from the North. The peace agreement, signed by the United States and North Vietnam in 1973, left South Vietnam to defend itself. By 1975, South Vietnamese forces were clearly in danger of defeat. President Ford tried to prevent a communist takeover. He asked Congress to approve $700 million in military aid for South Vietnam. Congress said no. The American people were tired of paying for the war. Saigon, the South Vietnamese capital, fell to communist forces on April 30, 1975. President Ford ordered the rescue of American citizens and South Vietnamese who had supported the American efforts. Few people who saw those struggling to escape Saigon will ever forget that day. Terrified Vietnamese were screaming for help at the American embassy. Everyone was pushing, trying to escape the city. Some held on to overloaded military helicopters as the aircraft tried to take off. As a signal to American citizens to prepare to leave, Armed Forces Radio had played the song White Christmas. Some were to go to an apartment building where a helicopter would pick them up from the roof. But other people also tried to get onto the helicopter, a scene captured in a famous news photo of the fall of Saigon. The former South Vietnamese capital was renamed Ho Chi Minh City. In the Middle East, Henry Kissinger led negotiations after the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. Israel agreed to give up some captured territory. In return, the United States promised not to recognize or deal with the Palestine Liberation Organization unless the PLO met certain conditions. In September 1975, Israel and Egypt signed an agreement that included permission for American civilians to act as observers along the ceasefire lines. Henry Kissinger was praised for his peacemaking efforts, though peace in the Middle East would remain a challenge for future administrations. At home, things seemed better as the presidential election campaign of 1976 began. That year marked the nation's 200th birthday. The United States was not fighting any wars. Unemployment remained high, but inflation had eased. Most importantly, Gerald Ford had led the country through the difficult period after Watergate.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.